Good afternoon. So I'm going to call to order the Joint Legislative Committee on Information Management and Technology for March 23rd, 2017. Sean, what do we have today?
Chair Riley, members of the committee, we have a very full agenda today. We have three informational meeting items. The first item up is the Department of Human Services Integrated Eligibility Project. We have the director for DHS, the director for the Oregon Health Authority, and the state chief information officer here to present. We'll then move to the Employment Department and then the Department of Revenue. Both agencies will give an information technology overview on their agencies. So the first item up is Department of Human Services Integrated Eligibility Project. If you could come on up. And please remember to introduce yourself for the record.
Welcome.
Thank you.
So whenever you're ready.
Good afternoon. I'm Lynn Saxton, the director of the Oregon Health Authority, and with me are my colleagues Clyde Psyche, director of DHS, and Alex Pettit, chief information officer. And we're pleased to be here with you today to provide an update on the Integrated Eligibility Medicaid Eligibility Project. I want to start out with, Alex, can you do the slides? Mm-hmm. Thank you. Just with a frame here for how this work begins, the Health Authority, as you may know, is the federally designated Medicaid authority for the state of Oregon. And we're accountable to the Center for Medicare and Medicaid Services for receiving and deploying federal funds, compliance with federal statutes and regulations, and most importantly, results. Oregon's vision for integrated eligibility, which is displayed here through the various programs which will be integrated, has two fundamental goals which we're very excited about implementing for Oregonians. The first is improved and simplified access to people using the system. And second is efficiency and lower cost for taxpayers. It's interesting to note that 60 to 80% of applicants are eligible for multiple OHA and DHS programs requiring input of the same and similar information. So again, by collaborating to produce this this tool, it means their participation gets easier. And I do want to say that part of my experience in the last 2 years of my tenure is to set expectations reasonably as opposed to in the stratosphere. And so this is complex and difficult work. We're very committed to doing it well, but it will be a process that produces results over time, not immediate perfection. So here's a little background on the One system, which you may be familiar with. We began with Cover Oregon in 2014. With the purchase and contract for a new replacement system as the result of Cover Oregon. And that purchase and contract was executed by former OHA and DHS staff. The ACA Medicaid expansion added many OHP members in 2014. As you'll recall, the original estimates were that we would have about 230,000 participants in Medicaid expansion. The actual number that evolved was about 450,000. And finally, eligibility and renewals were paused at this time for transition to the new system. In 2015, we worked hard throughout that year to stand up the basic One eligibility system, which needed 9 enhancements. We knew that in order to meet the go-live deadline of December 2015, that some of those enhancements would be done in the following year, 2016. Also in 2015, there was a new Oregon Health Authority leadership team. We assumed responsibility for the One system management with project manager Sarah Miller, and we identified at that time and shared with this committee in 2015 the importance of using 2016 to enter the data carefully as opposed to just rolling over electronic data from Cover Oregon into the One system, and we've been in the process of doing that throughout this year. 2016 has been the data cleanup year. We've been doing manual conversion of current OHP members via full paper applications. And our eligibility renewals have resumed in the One system, and perhaps most excitingly, the One applicant portal went live, which allows members to access their benefits through their own technology or through community-based technology. And now as we go forward into 2017 and the next challenge, the next frontier, if you will, for DHS and OHA to collaborate to produce the result we will bring to Oregonians, we're in the process of completing the first cycle of renewals into the One system, which has caused some turbulence in the data because once you start the redetermination process, there's a lot of transition in the data, but that work is well underway. And secondly, we initiated what you'll hear about today, the OHA and DHS joint governance projects to implement IE. I want to focus on a few of the challenges that we experienced with the One implementation. As I mentioned, it was purchased on a short timeline with basic functionality and requiring 81 key enhancements to meet our Medicaid eligibility program. And during this process of launching the tool, we have had both people, process, and technology challenges, all of which are common for this kind of a project. But we have had personnel challenges. We've had training materials issues. We've had the manual conversion process, which if none of you have seen firsthand, I invite you to join me at the call center. It's laborious. It's hard work. And finally, we've had limited functionality at stand-up, but because we have a number of corrections and build-outs enhancements left to complete. OHA tackled these issues. First, we tackled the people challenges by engaging KPMG to assess and assist. Deloitte worked with us closely to improve staff training. We made operational changes at the call center, and we collaborated with the SEIU to add vendor support from the private sector. We also worked on some of our process elements, and we joined the IE project work in 2016, but we also identified shared resources we could dedicate to supporting the efforts, and we streamlined our decision-making at the call center and within our organizations. With regard to the technology, we engaged the Oregon Chief Information Officer to help us through next phase issues. We defined a target operating model. We completed 214 of 494 known corrections and 34 of 81 key enhancements. Most critically, we upgraded our call center phone system to technology that would do a better job than what we started with. We still have challenges there, but we've made significant improvements. And now we're working to re-baseline the timeline, cost, and deliverables for the next phase of the project. We retained, to get the project on track and moving quickly, we retained the Coraggio Group to establish a governance model for IEME, which is done. We've established a joint governance board. We have been in the process, Director Psyche and I, of identifying an independent project manager, which was recommended by CMS to us as best practice. They've found the most success nationally in using this model and implementing integrated eligibility systems. That manager will be accountable for the entire project, budget, timeline, scope. They will own the communication to the legislature and others, though, of course, we're always available, as you know. They will have frontline management accountability with Deloitte and be directly accountable to the Joint Governance Board, which is comprised of us. The IEME leadership team has been meeting to address problems, begin transition efforts, and I think we have a solid team in place with experience and tenacity and commitment. Again, we will be looking at a new budget, timeline, and work plan with Deloitte, and we will be expecting to see that in the next several weeks. And I'm going to turn it over to Director Psyche.
Thanks, Director Sexton. Chair Riley, Chair Nathanson, members of the committee, for the record, Clyde Psyche, Department of Human Services. I'm going to quickly go over the governance structure because I think that's really an important part of any project. And so the slide up on your screen right now really outlines what the governance structure for the project would be, will be. And what we wanted to do and what really our goal was to have is streamline the process as possible so that we could maintain flexibility and decisions could be made quickly. So they're really, once you get past the day-to-day operations of the project team, two levels of governance. One is the IEME leadership team, and then the second is the Joint Governance Board. So the Joint Governance Board is really the top tier of the governance structure or the decision-making for the project. Consists of three voting members, the three people at the table here, and representatives who are non-voting members from both OHA and DHS, and then also resource subject matter expert people that we can bring in anytime we have a specific issue. And if you look at that box under that top box, it's really making decisions at the very highest level. It's around budget, scope changes, policy changes, issues with the vendor that can't be resolved at lower levels. And really, our expectation is that this board or this party will have to make very few decisions, and really a lot of the decisions will be made at the lower level. And quite frankly, if we're making a lot of the decisions on the project at this level, then something's probably not working right, and we're going to have to go back and kind of figure out what's not working. So the middle level, and this is where all the work, a lot of the decision making and leadership gets done, and it's the integrated eligibility, Medicaid eligibility leadership team, and it's head up by the independent project manager. Again, you have the project lead from OHA and DHS, our CIO, and then other members of the team, as well as other subject matter experts. And really, the scope of responsibility, that first bullet, I think, is a really important bullet, and I kind of want to elaborate on that. Because one of the things that we decided as a project that if we really wanted integrated eligibility, we would actually centralize eligibility in one agency. And so as we move through the transition, we'll have one agency that's responsible for Medicaid eligibility as well as the other three major programs. They also will approve QA reports, review IVNV materials and reports, and I don't need to read that to you, but it really is that critical level of decision-making, and we have vested a lot of authority in the independent project manager. They'll be able to make decisions, many of the decisions to guide the project, and will also be the person responsible for determining whether or not we have the right people at the table. And we've also given that person authority to change the team as they see fit. So this last slide that I have really talks about the independent project manager, and this person is the key person. And we are currently negotiating with someone because we feel very strongly that unless we make the proper hire for this key position, the project is not going to be successful. And again, really, if you look at the list here, it's really their responsibility or responsibilities that are inherent with all project managers for most major projects like this. So with that, I'm going to stop and turn it over to Alex.
Chair Nathanson, Chair Riley, members of the committee, my name is Alex Pettit, and I'm the Chief Information Officer for the State of Oregon. And I'm just here to outline some of the more technical components and issues and challenges we face as we go forward on this. So I gave you a copy here of this chart, a hand copy of this being passed around. But basically what this is surfacing is one of the things that was one of the challenges we have in this project are the legacy systems that support or that will be continued to be supported by the even after the completion of the integrated eligibility project. So this is no small challenge. In the Department of Revenue, when they had done their project, these were the first things they had done is worked on their legacy systems for about a year, year and a half before they even began the core system replacement. This is one of those things that we're aware of, that we're sensitive to. There's about 22 systems, 55 interfaces. There are going to be numerous modifications that are necessary to continue to support these systems. Basically, the systems will remain in production even after the implementation of integrated eligibility is completed. So this is a measurement, if you will. This is kind of a pictorial depiction of the complexity we have. The blue dots represent, or the blue circles represent, various stage gate projects that are going on concurrently, simultaneously, that could affect these legacy systems as well. While the integrated eligibility project is underway, we have a hard deadline of getting this done for funding from CMS of December of 2018. So this is, for those of you that know COBOL and know legacy systems, this is no small task that we've got before us here. The next slide illustrates the various DHS OHA portfolio, the IT portfolio. Again, these are just the projects that are under StageGate. DHS has three projects. OHA has a lot of projects. We've got integrated eligibility. One of the things that was asked is how much this is. $162 million estimated on that project. You see provider time capture going on. You see centralized abuse and management. So I just wanted to be sure that I brought this out so that there was an awareness of the number of projects that's going on and what demand that takes on resources and what have you as well. One of the things that the three of us are going to talk about and get through is going through and prioritizing, reprioritizing, and then more importantly, which is illustrated in the next slide, sequencing of events. Because as you see, several of these projects, well, I say several, all these projects are going on concurrently. So this is one of those things that has to get addressed as well. And the reason that we bring that up is, again, it's one of those things you got so many subject matter experts, particularly on legacy systems, and there's only so much water you can run through a funnel, and that's really what this is that's the limiting factor that we're seeing here. And then the last thing is really the quality management reports every month there. You know, you can see, and we bring these out, we report these. And right now we've moved from a green status to a red status. And so I'm sure that's part of the reason the interest of the committee and others in this and how this has been going. So I guess with that, we'll stand for questions.
So I have a few questions. First of all, what's the estimated budget on the current project? Do we have that budget yet?
Senator Riley, members of the committee, right now that estimated budget is there, that $162 million and whatever that change.
Okay.
I don't want to call it change. Difference of amount, that little bit at the end.
The 165 million?
162 million, sir. I'm okay. Sorry if that's not
I'm missing.
Yet.
It's the upper left.
Upper left corner of the blue.
It's right here.
Oh, I see. Okay, great. Thank you.
Yes, sir.
And what do you think? Is that going to be enough? What's your level of confidence on that budget number?
Senator Riley, members of the committee, when we've looked at, so one of the things that we're going to have to take a deeper look at is that, for want of a better way to describe it, that spaghetti chart there. And so what is it going to cost, and will we need other additional resources to do that? Those would be marginal. I wouldn't want to nail it to that amount, but right now, the direct answer is that we're reworking scope and budget with our partners, and we'll have a better number, we hope, very, very soon.
Okay. And what's the budget split between state and federal?
The budget split is, I believe, 7-1, but I need confirmation of that, and I'll get the actual number back to you.
If you could, that'd be
yep.
Great. And how much time has been spent so far in this project?
Senator Riley, members of the committee, when you speak of the amount of time spent on this project, I guess it depends where we would want to have started, say the start date was from. I would submit to you that the start date could be declared from when we actually began the Cover Oregon project, because that was the original integrated eligibility, unified, one-stop shop vision that we had done.
Let's start with the one.
With the one project, yes, sir. Then I would say that would have been January of or February of 2015. It was January 2015 is when we got the stay from Judge Geyer to keep the existing system available. We had 1 year to get it up. And so from January, February of 2015 to February of 2016, it went live, fully live, February 2016. So,
and do you know when you're going to hire the new director? Is that, what's the progress on that?
So, Chair Nathanson, Chair Riley, we are in the final stages of negotiation. We think we're going to be able to wrap that up this week, and we actually have a projected start date of March 31st.
Okay. So, so we're going to have probably getting him or her up to speed. We'll have to do some relooking at the project plans, make sure that that person agrees that the project plans are correct, that sort of thing.
So. And Chair Nathanson, Chair Riley, the person actually for the last couple of weeks has been spending time with team members and also reviewing all the project documentation, including the contract we have with Deloitte. So the person is already getting up to speed on all those issues.
Okay, that's great.
Yeah.
And the other next question I have is about, again, about the federal funding. Assurance do we have, and how long will this federal funding last?
Co-chairs Nathanson and Riley, the federal funding, we have to be at a certain stage of completion by December 2018 to secure the federal funding. So we will get, once we update our project plan, our timeline, our budget, we'll get back to you with kind of our schedule for complying with those deadlines, but it is a crisp federal deadline of the December 31st, 2018. We have to be have met CMS requirements for completion.
Okay. So if we're not at the right stage of the project by then, we lose the federal funding. Is that correct?
Co-chairs Nathanson and Riley. Yes. However, the stage is to be determined in collaboration with CMS, and they are exercising some flexibility with that stage in other states around the country on this integrated eligibility work.
Yes, Representative Nathanson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is an IT committee, and we talk about systems, but this is really about people. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to share some thoughts on this with and in front of my colleagues on this committee. But also ask you to react. What started out as a great idea for fully integrating applications for eligibility, then out of necessity was going to get narrowed to really the health side of things. And then in 2015, the reason I know a lot about this is because it was my bill. In 2015, I passed a bill. It was House Bill 2219, I think was the number there. The bill passed the House unanimously, and then it passed the Oregon State Senate unanimously, asking you to look into integrated eligibility for human services as well. And this is what I said about it at the time. Oregonians who need some help are jumping through hoops and then the same hoops again in order to receive services that they need. SNAP, WIC, Oregon Health Plan, employment-related daycare, low-income home energy assistance, weatherization assistance, job training, employment services, temporary assistance for domestic violence survivors, school-based breakfast and lunch, state children's health insurance, Oregon summer food service, unemployment insurance. That's just a partial list. There were dozens of programs that people could be applying for, but in some cases they were applying over and over and over again using the same name, the same address, the same number of children. And I pointed out there has to be a better way. And the House and Senate passed the bill saying you should work on this and you should accomplish this. This really is about both making things more efficient in the way we deliver state services and making it a lot easier on the Oregonians we're trying to help. So I wanted to bring the human aspect of why are we doing this? It's a technology program. Ultimately, it's about smarter government and serving Oregonians better. So in that light, I'm concerned, and I want to thank both of you, department heads, for speaking with me a couple weeks ago. I felt very relieved after having spoken with you both. My concern is that this program not go sideways. Mm-hmm. I don't think that it's likely we will have another opportunity to get, let's say, approximately $40 million of federal assistance in doing this very important program. I would very much like to make sure we can take advantage of this opportunity and not jeopardize it. This isn't just about technology. It's about programs. Mm-hmm. Thank you for letting me talk for a few minutes.
Oh, not a problem. And I saw a lot of nodding heads, which is a good sign. So just a couple more things. First of all, I wonder, how much has the governor's office been briefed on this project? Where does that stand?
Senator Riley, members of the committee, the governor's office has been briefed, gets briefed every week. I send a report to them every week on the status. In cooperation with OHA and DHS, I send a written report every week, email to them about where we are and what's going on, what's been accomplished, and what we're doing next. So, and that goes to the chief of staff, and so we're keeping them apprised.
Yes.
Just a question on, is there a way to marry this spaghetti chart as you're describing it to the next slide? The follow-on slide is the one with all of these categories and funding levels and whatnot. Per Rep. Nathanson's comment, we're talking about streamlining this for people, and the numbers on this page, this adds up. I'm just doing it in my head at an eyeball level. It's just under $400 million. And there's only 4 million people in the entire state. So this is an enormous amount of money and resources to service a smaller portion, 700,000, 800,000 individuals. And the overhead that we're expending is tremendous. I would love to see this married to the spaghetti chart and the old legacy systems and what they look like. I'm wondering if you have that at hand. And if in my summary I made mistakes, please correct me.
Chair Riley, Senator Lithicum, thank you for the question. The direct answer to the question is no, I don't have it. I can put it together and illustrate it in a pictorially for you if that's your desire. There is a concept that we're working on right now it's right now on the whiteboard in my office, so it's very embryonic, around something we call a digital wallet, where a citizen would have. So one of the problems or one of the challenges we have is when an Oregonian interacts with an agency, what do they give up on privacy and what have you? So what makes it easier for us to be able to pass information may not necessarily be the desire of the citizen themselves. So being able to have basically a wallet that you would be able to, in turn, as an individual, decide if you wanted to let that information be shared or not and updated or not and whatever, that would go a long way towards making this, instead of it being our responsibility, making it a shared response or even a shared decision point with the citizen if they want to engage in something or not. Many, many times people come to the agencies, DHS or OHA, looking specifically just for insurance or just for, you know, they have an immediate need. It doesn't mean that they necessarily want to exclude themselves, but at the same time, they may not want to avail themselves of it either. And right now, I guess the thing that we're hoping, that I'm hoping that we can do, is begin this design around a citizen experience or a citizen journey where they have a wallet and some control over how they interact with these different solutions. So that's right now, again, it's just on the grease board. You know, it's very early in the stages for me of putting this together.
Thank you.
So with that in mind, one question that pops to mind is, what are the consequences if we actually canceled or delayed the integrated project?
So, Chair Riley and Chair Nathanson, I'll take a stab at that and then turn it over to Director Saxton. For one thing, again, with the deadline of December 2008 to take advantage of the enhanced funding from Center for Medicaid and Medicare Services, we would probably lose that opportunity and may not be able to get it back, which means if we canceled or decided to start over, the general fund portion or other fund portion of the project would be increased. I think the other piece of it is that when you really look at some of our legacy systems, especially when you look at some of the DHS systems around our Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program or SNAP program, some of those systems are sort of limping along, and we could probably keep them going for a while, but the cost to maintain these systems that are kind of, I guess, for lack of a better term, near end of life is just going to keep increasing as we go along. And so I think from the DHS perspective, the probably increased costs if we delay or do this later, and then the risk to some of our systems. And again, getting back to Representative Nathanson's point, if we delay it, then people will just have to keep jumping through all the hoops they have to jump through now, as opposed to being able to come into one office and give us their information, and then we'd be able to determine, here are the services that you're eligible for. So, and I'll let Director Saxton.
Co-Chair Nathanson, Riley, our commitment is to get this done. This is the highest priority. This is job one. And I think what work to come for our agencies, supported by the Chief Information Officer's team, is to prioritize work with that budget timeline work plan to get this done. And that's going to require some shifting of other priorities in the agency's IT portfolio. We're prepared to do this. But I think part of what we've been successful in doing in the last several weeks is identifying for both agencies this is job one.
Any other questions for these folks? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Co-Chair Riley, members of the committee, just a reminder, we will be asking the agency to come back. We'll probably have one, two, or all three of the former presenters with us on April 20th. Okay. We'll have a focus on this project and also a broader overview of the Department of Human Services and Oregon Health Authority's IT environment as well. We're going to provide some extensive time on our schedule on April 20th.
Well, I think that's a good plan.
Good, good. With that said, our next presenter is, excuse me.
Oh, excuse me,
yes,
Mr. Chair.
Representative.
I'm sorry they left the room already, but I was really quick doing a little research into when I thought we had a briefing on this topic. And I did find a document still posted on the web from a meeting of the committee in January a year ago. And it says the eligibility system project is a 90-10 match, 90% federal, 10% general fund match. And then there's also some match money available from the Food and Nutrition Services and SNAP eligibility project and some other stuff. and it said it will save us 40. It's documented in here in this. Maybe I will make sure that I can get this link to our committee administrator so it can be shared. So it's just sort of interesting to look at what the briefing was like before. And it said it also discusses what would happen if it was delayed and the status of the project as of that date a year ago.
Great.
I think it's good for context.
Thanks.
If I can ask a question.
Sure.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We just heard a statement 7-to-1 ratio, and you're suggesting that it was a 9-to-1 ratio, or the projection was a 9-to-1 ratio. Is that correct?
Well, yes, Mr. Chair. What I'm reading here shows, at least for that part of the money, it looks like money's coming from more than one program to contribute to this. So for that one, let's see, what was the name of it? Oh, I just lost the page. I'm almost there again. The Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services funds Medicaid eligibility system. That one is the 90-10 match, and it looks like the Food and Nutrition Services funds SNAP project match is 50-50, and then there's a cost allocation. Let's see, CMS, FNS, ACF, all these, I can't tell you what those all are. We'll figure it out. Developed a joint A87 cost allocation exception allowing for sharing of costs across all three program areas so that the federal state match is estimated now at 85-15.
So, and to be honest, as she said, I think it's about 7-to-1, and she would get back to us on that.
Right. Okay.
Certainly, co-chairs, members of the committee, the agencies have legislative fiscal office analysts, so we can have them work with the agencies to come and then come back with some more definitive figures for the committee. We'll make sure to have that information distributed, along with the links of previous presentations. You all may recall via email, I did send the September 2016 link to the written report, but certainly can look historically and get you some additional links on history on this project.
Thank you, but you we really do need to move on.
We do, so. Right. The next topic up is the Employment Department. They'll be providing an information technology overview for the committee. And gentlemen, if you could remember to introduce yourself for the record before you begin presenting. I think I'll just take a second to switch slide presentations.
Okay, good afternoon. Co-Chair Nathanson, Co-Chair Riley, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Graham Slater, and I serve as the Deputy Director for the Oregon Employment Department. And I'll let my co-presenter introduce himself, as we will be tag-teaming throughout the presentation.
Thanks, Graham. Co-Chair Nathanson, Co-Chair Riley, members of the committee. My name is Bill Truex, and I'm the Chief Information Officer for the Oregon Employment Department.
So I'm going to take the first few slides just to give you a very quick overview of what the Employment Department does. That sets the context then for all of the IT discussion that will come. Clearly, our IT work, like everything else we do, only happens to help us meet our mission of supporting business and promoting employment. We feel that our agency is pretty fortunate because there's a very easy link between the work we do and the success for Oregonians and Oregon businesses. We know, as you do, that Oregonians want good jobs. We know that Oregon businesses want good workers. And we know that both groups want good information about the economy and jobs and wages and careers and those things. As Representative Nathan said actually just a few minutes ago, we know that this is about people, not about systems. And I loved when you said that. And we know that we cannot serve all those people without the support of our IT systems and our IT staff. So that's a great connection. We have three main divisions, and I'm just going to highlight the work of each of them. Our unemployment insurance division exists to help Oregonians, individuals, and families through those times of unemployment. And clearly when they do that, they also help communities through recessions or through big layoffs. And they help businesses by keeping employees in the area so that when the economy picks back up, those businesses can actually find workers. They didn't leave the area. In support of unemployment insurance, our IT systems last year gathered information and had information from 140,000 businesses. We had employment records on 2 million Oregon workers. We paid more than $500 million in benefits, unemployment benefits, to about 125,000 workers. And to really emphasize the importance of this program, during the worst of the recession, we paid $2.7 billion in 1 year alone to over 300,000 Oregonians. That was 2010. And that really obviously made a difference, not just to them, but to those entire communities in which they live. Our Workforce Operations Division is the group that has all of those offices all across the state, the WorkSource offices, and they help people find jobs. They also work with the local boards, local workforce boards, and with state, local, and nonprofit entities to help point people to the right training that they need in order to ultimately find those jobs. In the last program year, they helped almost 300,000 job seekers and a little over 11,000 businesses posted openings with us. Our economic research team, they're the ones that produce a lot of the statistics that you're familiar with, like the unemployment rate, which got a lot of attention a couple days ago. We also look at employment by industry, wage levels by occupation, and we look into the future to say, what are the jobs of the future and what are the training needs for those jobs? We provide administration support to two independent bodies, the Oregon Office of Administrative Hearings and the Oregon Talent Council. And when we say administration support, we mean things like accounting, procurement, human resources, and information technology. We have locations and staff all across the state. They're not just all here in Salem. So we have two unemployment insurance contact centers. We have 37 WorkSource offices. And in the research division, a lot of our economists are spread out across the state to be local resources, and they're often located within the workforce board offices. So I share all this to say that we need our IT staff to support all those program areas and all those locations. And then I'll hand it over to Bill to start telling you more about how he and his folks do that.
Thank you. Our IT team consists of 79 positions. We reorganized during the 2013-15 biennium to align IT into functional groups, as you can see on this slide. I'll also mention that our agency is fully migrated to the state data center, relying on enterprise technology services, catalog of services that they provide to the state. Starting on the left, our systems team administers the technical infrastructure and foundational systems that support our agency. They're responsible for managing our servers, including deploying and updating software, applying security patches, and things of that nature. They also provide database administration, source code management, and report development for our mainframe systems. Our application development team includes employees dedicated to our mainframe systems. The mainframe functions as the system of record for the majority of our unemployment insurance, tax and benefits data, as well as many elements of our workforce operations data. This group also includes a web development team that develops and supports our non-mainframe systems. And they also complete and manage web portals that are the front end for some of our mainframe applications. Our business intelligence group also resides within this team. They support our enterprise data warehouse and the business intelligence products that are built on top of that warehouse. They also provide training and support to a very active user group of program staff who develop data and reporting for their respective program areas. And security or support service, our security and quality assurance testing team will likely be changing soon given the ongoing security unification. That's why the security box is grayed out on this slide. Our agency supports the security unification effort, and our deputy chief information officer is on the enterprise security unification steering committee. Quality assurance testing, which is a relatively new group for our organization, was created in the 2015-17 biennium. It provides more formal testing of internally developed applications, ultimately reducing bugs and errors that we introduce into our production environments. And our support services team on the far right includes our frontline help desk support team located at our Salem administrative offices. Our field services team, which is embedded in the WorkSource offices across the state and in our two unemployment insurance contact centers. Each of the field service employees support multiple locations within a geographical area, along with phone and email support from our administrative office team. And lastly, I'll point out that our project management team, our project management office provides business analyst support to help develop project requirements and manage IT projects. And they also develop and manage our resource capacity planning process, which helps inform IT governance and our capacity planning to deliver on requests. So our IT strategy is in alignment with both the agency strategic plan and with the Office of the State CIO's Transportation and Economic Development Strategic Plan. Starting at the top left, I'll describe our security improvements later, and I've already mentioned we support the security unification project. Modernization is of our core systems is our agency's number one IT goal, and I'll describe it in more detail in a few minutes on another slide. Graham will also describe our agency's work on business-driven IT governance in just a few minutes. We've seen firsthand how good governance structure can dramatically improve success of our agency's IT work. And as far as IT service delivery, in our agency, there are three primary focuses areas that we want to improve IT service delivery right now. We're applying industry best practices to our ticketing and workflow alignment system. We're improving our IT resource management and capacity planning, which informs our IT governance and project priority process. And we're continuing to build and develop our IT project management team in support of delivering projects on time, on budget, and within scope. For our IT budget, just to start off with, our agency budget is more than 99.9% federal and other funds. Our agency's overall budget has dropped dramatically over the past three bienniums, mainly due to the counter-cyclical nature of unemployment insurance revenue and expenditures increasing during times of recession and decreasing during better economic times. Our IT costs have remained fairly consistent because although there's some increase in IT workload during recessions, the majority of our technical work continues on regardless of the state of the of the economy. And lastly, I'll say that our IT services and supplies costs on the pie graph on the right include our state data center and other Office of the State CIO pass-through costs that we have.
So I'll chat about IT governance. Our current IT governance committee was formed in the fall of 2014, and as Bill has said, it's really played a huge role in helping us improve, prioritize, and coordinate our IT work. And I'll just hit a couple really important things in my mind. The first is that the committee has a really clear charter and a really clear purpose. So when we meet monthly, we know exactly what our business is, what we're supposed to achieve. It's a decision-making body that reviews all new project requests. It approves or rejects them. And if they're approved, it prioritizes them against other project requests from across the whole employment department. It's really important also to note that the chair and the vice chair are both from the business areas of the employment department, that all areas of the department are represented on this committee, and that the chief information officer, the deputy chief information officer, and the manager of the project management office all attend and actively participate in those meetings. But again, an emphasis that the decisions and the participation is across the agency.
Representative Nathanson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, for letting me interrupt for a moment. I am very taken by what you have just described, that the chair and vice chair, this is a business-driven selection or appointment, if you will. Again, sort of focusing on what's the purpose. The purpose isn't technology. Technology is used for something. So I have a question for our committee administrator. Is this typical or unusual?
Co-Chair Nathanson, members of the committee, I think over the last I'd say half a dozen or so years, certainly agencies have migrated in this direction. For the most part, there is an understanding, and if you recall, when The current state chief information officer had his first hearings before this committee and others. He indicated that there are no IT projects. There are only business projects that are enabled by information technology. And so I think from a philosophy perspective, most agencies recognize how important this shift really is, and the fact that at the end of the day, the director, deputy director, and the program area folks are the ones who are responsible for the money, the positions, and ultimately achieving program outcomes. And so they have to be involved. They have to be leading the conversation. So certainly the two agencies that you have, one in front of you and the next one, certainly those are agencies in my portfolio of oversight. They have this business-driven governance
in place. In fact, that's not really a change. It's always been that way. No IT department ever has existed.
You're right.
That didn't drive the business, that wasn't there to help drive the business. No IT department except IT companies have that as their goal, and so it's always been that way.
And Chair Riley, I think the key point is that those leaders in those organizations are beginning to embrace that role and understand that it can't be delegated to
right.
the CIO alone, that there has to be at minimum a partnership, if not, again, a true, again, business-driven approach to this topic.
Thank you.
And Chair Riley and Co-Chair Nathanson, I would just add that for us, we have had previous IT governance committees where all of the things you said, Co-Chair Riley, were true, but the committee itself and the agendas and the driving really came from IT, even though there were other business people on it. That's what's turned on its head now. The agendas, the discussions are driven from the business side. Mm-hmm. So let's move to the next slide. I know you have a clock going. And this one really just summarizes a lot of what we just mentioned. I will summarize it by saying it's very clear to us that our executive team, they set the priorities, the direction for the agency, and then they have delegated to this IT governance committee the responsibility to manage and prioritize the IT projects in sync with our strategic plan, in sync with our broader priorities. And so the arrows here simply indicate there's a lot of communication that goes from IT governance to the executive team and IT governance out to the business areas, to the IT folks, and so on. So I will cut that shorter, but I think you get the idea of what we're doing with governance.
All right, and here are a few examples of major projects that we've completed during this biennium, the 2015-17 biennium. I'm really excited about the first item that's on this list here, our unemployment insurance contact center telephony system upgrades. When I arrived here in the spring of 2015, we had a system in our contact centers that was legacy hardware, unsupported hardware, which lacked redundancy in a lot of the features that you would normally consider essential in a contact center environment. We now have a voice over IP-based system that is current technology. It has built-in resiliency that allows us to remain operational even when we lose contact with one or both of our contact centers. We've already seen benefits to our customers since we've implemented this system last year, in that during the snow of this past winter, we lost access to both of our contact centers. Our employees were not able to make it into those locations, and so we were able to quickly redirect calls over to our administrative offices here in Salem to be able to continue to deliver to Oregonians in need. So that was an immediate benefit that we've seen in the past calendar year from implementing this system. In the interest of time, I'll skip over a few of these others and just point out that the partnership with the Department of Revenue here is important because our agency IT systems do not exist in a vacuum here. We have linkages with IT systems in many other state and federal agencies. Department of Revenue is just one of those. And as agencies take on modernization efforts and replacing their systems, it's important that we adapt on our side to be able to continue to deliver the data and the information that they need to be successful. So the Oregon Payroll Reporting System 2.0 is one of our major projects. that we've reported on. The original front end to this system proved too complex for businesses to use, so the 2.0 project replaces the original front end with a more streamlined and user-friendly solution. It allows us to retire several other legacy reporting solutions that we have, combining them into a single interface. We currently have StageGate 3 approval and are negotiating a contract with the vendor presently. Agency security compliance project is a combination of 8 solutions to resolve gaps identified in past security audits. We've been engaged with the Office of the State CO, Enterprise Technology Services, and Enterprise Security Office to identify existing solutions that we could either share or join in that are already in place at that level, as well as working with these oversight agencies to identify vendors and solutions. We currently have 3 of the 8 systems in production and expect to have the balance completed by the end of this biennium in June of 2017. The Office of Administrative Hearings has a case management solution that is currently closing out phase 2. The first phase of this project was to implement the larger and primary caseload agencies, which was during last biennium. This biennium, we have worked on the remaining agencies, boards, and commissions. We're currently in the warranty phase of this project closeout, and we're transitioning from implementation to an operational support model with the vendor. This project was under oversight of the Office of the State CO and remains on track and within budget. For our performance reporting information system, known as PRISM, provides performance measures for Oregon's workforce system. With funding from a grant from the U.S. Department of Labor, PRISM is undergoing a complete redesign to introduce new performance measures and a new web-based performance measure tool. We've already rolled out our customer satisfaction survey tools and summary reports for 3 federal and 2 Oregon workforce measures, and we're now working with the Higher Education Coordinating Commission to add data from Oregon universities and community colleges into PRISM. And we expect to complete the final phase of this work in the second half of 2017. And finally, we have our modernization initiative. As I referenced earlier, the modernization initiative is our agency's top priority. We need to replace our core unemployment insurance, tax, and workforce operations systems for reasons that include the following. Our core system supporting unemployment insurance functions were designed in the 1990s, long before widespread use of internet to transmit information and conduct business. The newest of these 3 core systems, our job matching system, is over 13 years old, and it took several years of development prior to bringing that system live. It's also becoming increasingly difficult to find and recruit IT staff with skills in these legacy applications and legacy operating systems. And on top of that, we have currently 20% of our IT workforce in our agency is eligible to retire. And over the next 5 years, 38% of our IT workforce is eligible for retirement. Both technology and business processes have changed a lot in the last 20 or 30 years. And I could keep on this subject for probably another 10 minutes, but I'll move on that. To bring you up to date on where we are with the project, we have an executive level steering committee that meets twice monthly presently. We have a contract for program management services. We've met with representatives from Oregon and other state agencies, Oregon and Washington agencies, to discuss their modernization initiatives, ask them questions, understand best practices and lessons learned from their projects. We've also contracted with the IT Support Center to conduct a feasibility study. The IT Support Center is a part of the National Association of State Workforce Agencies. That's a bit of a tongue twister for me. And is affiliated with the U.S. Department of Labor. They're a nonprofit organization that knows our business, and they work with other state employment agencies in this space to help them with their modernization efforts. We work with them to develop a strategic plan currently, which includes a review of market options, business needs assessment, system and IT assessments, gap analysis, and readiness assessment of our agency to take on this work effort. We've also, in late November of 2016, hired a modernization initiative manager and three business analysts that are working in combination with the IT support center for this pre-planning activity that we have. We're also continuing to work with the Office of the State CIO, Chief Financial Office, and Legislative Fiscal Offices as we gain momentum in this initiative right now. And that concludes our presentation. Thank you for your time. And are there other questions?
Representative Nierman.
Good. Thank you, Chair Riley. So thanks for your presentation. I appreciate that. So so the Employment Department is kind of heavily driven by federal policies and federal money, and I think that's why you have the association you just referred to, and I don't remember it was the Association of Employment Agencies or something like that. So and then there was testimony the other day in the Transportation Economic Development Subcommittee that there's you have quite an extensive effort going on right now to document processes. And it occurs to me, and you can talk me out of this if you want, but that in the end, if I flip to the last chapter of the book, that the solution is going to be a commercial off-the-shelf thing that looks exactly like the employment software in West Virginia and Connecticut and New Mexico. And it would seem like you could probably just skip all the documenting of processes and just go to a fit gap analysis on what's already out there. Can you disabuse me of that notion, or is that correct, or is it halfway correct?
Co-Chair Riley, Co-Chair Nathanson, members of the committee, that is a way that it could be approached. Based on guidance I've received from various sources, we're taking a methodical approach to this, looking at where we are, what the solutions are. There is a fit gap analysis, but we've seen from other states that have not taken a fully thought out process that there's been difficulties with implementation between the states. We've also realized that our state is more integrated between our pillars of activity that we have versus other states that we've seen. That's something we've learned recently. So to model ourselves from off of one state or another that's had success, we're seeing that there are quite a lot of differences between how they are configured versus how we operate today. So I think in a less complex world, that is a solution that we could, that's a path we could take forward.
So then if I could just...
Did you have an answer to that as well?
Co-Chair Riley and Representative Nierman, if I can just add one comment. Mm-hmm. Even in the first round of work from this IT support center, and I wrote it down, they made a comment in their briefing to us that our systems within the Employment Department, with the other workforce partners, with the Department of Revenue across, they said our systems are the most integrated they've ever seen. And so while the basic unemployment insurance work does exist nationwide, and even there, every state has different rules and laws,
Sure. The
extent to which agencies work across their state government varies a lot. So that's something we learned like 2 weeks ago. So I think it directly addresses your
good comment. Thanks. And that's
another question.
Not really just a comment to tie it up, but that's news to me that I was under the impression that maybe employment departments were a little bit more like and from state to state. So maybe they're not. So thanks.
Yeah, thank you.
So just a comment, employment department's important to me. My father-in-law, Ted Huff, ran the Oregon City office in the 50s.
Oh.
So.
Nice history.
Yeah.
It's great. So. Well, thank you.
Other questions? Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you for your time.
Co-Chair Riley, members of the committee, I wanted to remind you that in this particular slide deck, we did ask the department to include some appendix information. Some of them are eye charts, but it certainly, if you scroll down in your own version, you'll see some of that complexity begin to take form. Certainly, in the number of systems, the number of integration points. But I'll leave that for now. Would also just mention that we do plan to bring the Employment Department back to this committee sometime in mid to late April on this specific initiative. There'll be a more detailed presentation at that time. Last up, we have the Department of Revenue, who will be providing an information technology overview of
of the Department of Revenue. Very glad to have the Chief Information Officer for Revenue with us. Gary, if you could remember to introduce yourself for the record.
Certainly. Co-chairs, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Gary Johnson. I'm the information technology, Chief Information Technology Officer for our Department of Revenue. So, appreciating that we're limited on time, I'll try and be as brief as possible and won't go into as much detail as I had planned to. But if there's a slide that you would like to see or have more information about, please feel free to ask. So in terms of who and what we support, the Department of Revenue's Information Technology Services, or ITS as we call it, supports a little over 1,000 users across four business divisions, our director's office, our PMO, and five field locations spread across the state. We currently have a biannual budget of $23.7 million, and it's largely made up of personal services. So, the department did put in a request, POP 102, for some additional resources and support in the next biennium. And that request really covers two things. First, to help with our post-implementation transition to operations and to further exploit some of the efficiencies that our new core system replacement solution will offer us. Additionally, to provide resources to help us migrate our remaining legacy applications off of those legacy environments in a reasonable amount of time. This was not supported by GRB, and so we're going to continue on with our plan, but it's going to impact existing resources, obviously, in my organization, and I think the agency as a whole will see a different service level than they've seen previously. The other risk associated with not funding it is that we're likely to perpetuate some of the risks associated with continuing on using legacy applications for tax administration. So, as I mentioned, ITS is an organization of 69 FTE, with six of those positions being management positions. Much like the Department of Employment, we're functionally aligned across five units. I have two direct reports. I have the deputy CIO and our technical architect. And as a result of Executive Order 1613, I have a dotted line into our information security team. I report to the director's office. I'm a voting member of the executive team. And I think this has significance because I think it really speaks to the value that Revenue puts on technology and its abilities to create efficiencies and solve business problems. So this is a busy slide, and again, I'll try to be brief, but I think this slide nicely conveys our evolution over time in terms of our maturing of services while we maintain our required balancing act. And when I talk about our balancing act, the value an IT organization has to the agency as a back office support function really comes in two ways. It's our ability to keep our products and services that we support operationally stable, sometimes referred to as keeping the lights on, and then being able to offer new tools that help the business do things quicker, cheaper, better. And to that extent, I think we've done a fairly good job with keeping pace with the evolving technologies and industry best practice. And at the same time, I don't think there's much appetite in the state for incurring the risks of bleeding edge technologies. So again, I think we've been able to keep pace with that for the most part. Although in a couple of instances, technology has outpaced us and we haven't been able to adapt as quickly as we like. And I'll get to that in just a minute, if I may. So here's what we're working on and adding to our portfolio. four of the five first bullets on the left-hand column I'll be talking about briefly, and I think you're familiar with the Enterprise Telephony Project, known as MUSIC. The next four bullets or five bullets are really about us moving some utility functions into the cloud, trying to keep pace again with some of the evolving technologies and opportunities there. And then the last four bullets really speak to our desire to mature our organization. So we went over some of the what or the outcomes that we've been working on. If I may, I'd like to talk about some of the tools and how we position ourselves for success in our organization. So what you're looking at here, it's a little difficult to read, but this is a roadmap for our Microsoft product lines. Across the top, you'll see there's the years. Along the Y and X axis, you'll see the product lines themselves. So if you go at the top left-hand corner, you'll see desktop. And with underneath the year in the product line are specific products. So in this particular example, we're looking at planning for Windows 10 and Office 2016 in this year, which is what we're doing. So these are important tools for us. We have a lot of roadmaps. We have a strategic plan. Ultimately, our strategic plan supports our agency's mission goals and values. And these tools really help us facilitate conversations for around investment with the leadership team. They help ITS improve planning for projects and resources. And while they don't dictate the solution, they certainly spur the conversation. And that's where we get into a conversation that, quite honestly, I quite enjoyed in our last presenter's presentation, which is governance. We do have a formal governance process at the Department of Revenue as well. Given the last conversation and the limited time, I won't spend a lot of time talking about this, but we do have a governance process that we continue to mature on. We're actually implementing a new governance process at the Department of Revenue. So governance, in my opinion, shouldn't remain static. It should evolve with the business. And with our new core system replacement effort all but fully implemented and understanding and appreciating the pervasiveness of that technology and the reliance on the tools that are available there, now was a good time for us to reevaluate that process. And to that end, we did. We created a new process that I think offers a more informed decision. And just like our previous presenter, it involves the entire business and provides greater transparency, better communication, and better alignment with the business. So, if I may, I'd like to provide you a quick update on some of our some of the major projects, agency-wide projects we're involved with at the department. There are four of them, and just full disclosure, there's a common theme across all four of these, and that's creating business efficiencies founded in technologies that are sustainably supportable. So for the benefit of some of our newer members on this committee, our largest project to date is our core system replacement project, also known as CSR. It, in its entirety, it's roughly a six-year endeavor for us, and it replaces the major system tools that we use to do tax administration. We have a dedicated team, technical team. We have a dedicated team, but there is a very specific technical team involved with this as well. Some of those resources are DOR staff, and a big chunk of those are vendor augmented. They're in their own location within the building, and they focus on this full time. And this is, in my opinion, one of the key contributors to our success to date. So this may be nostalgic for some. We're happy to see it go away. This is our legacy environment. This is commonly referred to as a green screen, and this is what's being replaced by Gentax. And this is the new interface that we're getting. You can see it's a modern-day interface built in a modern technology stack. It replaces our existing system functionality and offers some new feature sets as well, like real-time processing and risk scoring for refunds. So I'm happy to report that we've successfully implemented rollouts 1 through 3 and met all relevant requirements without any customization. We're on schedule for rollout 4, again, with right now no customizations, and we remain on budget for the project entirety at this point. So this is a hard to read slide as well. What's up on the screen here is a sort of applications, legacy applications, that we had at the Department of Revenue. So all three of those boxes, the dark blue, light blue, and orange, all are the same representation of applications. They're just sorted differently. So in the dark blue box, you'll see we're sorted by business function. The orange box is really by product line, and the light blue box is by platform. So as comprehensive as a product that Gentax is, there's still a significant number of applications that aren't going to be replaced or absorbed by our core system. And that's what we're referring to when we refer to legacy applications. Many of these applications are nearing or well into end of life in some instances, and as a result, are deemed insecure because the vendors are no longer patching and supporting these products. Additionally, a few of these applications reside in legacy platforms like the IBM iSeries, which presents its own set of challenges. But by far our biggest risk here is finding people still in the workforce that understand these obsolete technologies and furthermore are willing to come and work for us at the Department of Revenue. It's been a real challenge for us to date. We are a buy versus build shop first and foremost, but because of the unique nature in which we're required to do business at the Department of Revenue, we've been somewhat unsuccessful with finding a COTS or a SaaS/cloud solution to date. So our objective with this project really is to migrate those legacy applications over to a modern technology stack that's, again, sustainably supportable and secure.
Sarah Lincoln.
The very first slide says build over buy. Your statement just now was buy over build. And I'm just wondering if that is a mistake, because that, of course, caught my eye. And then to hear your comment with regard to this. The slide number one in your entire stack.
Okay.
And I don't know if that's a typo or what, you know.
Co-chairs, Senator Lithicum. I would have to assume that it is. Not explicitly sure where you're referring to. Slide number one.
Just scoot back. You can see it. It's only a couple pages away.
Oh, a couple?
Yeah, keep going. No. All the way to the top. Very first slide. Or second to first. There you go. One more. Keep going. Sheesh. It's right here somewhere. There you go, right there. First bullet, large development project oriented.
Oh, yeah. So this really, thank you for your question. This really speaks to our evolution over time. And yes, we were, in fact, a build over buy shop during that era. And we're no longer that. We no longer take that approach with our new product enhancements. We'd much rather buy a solution and not reinvent the wheel.
Okay, so this is historic. From 20,
this is
from
for
2005
posterity.
Through 11, that was a perspective. The other bullet under 12 through 16 is a change in perspective.
Co-chairs, Senator Linthicum, that's correct.
Okay, thank you. I didn't recognize that. Yeah. Thank you.
You're welcome. So, again, why we need to change, I spoke a little bit about the recruiting issues. At the same time, we have a workforce that's retiring. You can see in the lower right-hand bullet there that 22% of our workforce in ITS is going to be eligible for retirement the next time this full legislative body comes back together. When we start looking at the five-year outlook, that goes up to over 30%. We talked about the outdated technologies. The applications are really tough to maintain. We're single-threaded in some areas, meaning we have single points of success. Our customer support isn't where we'd like it to be. So we put together a plan knowing where we're heading. Again, we like to plan, be very planful about our stuff. And just for clarity, this slide represents technical resources. So prior to the project kicking off in 2013, we had 69 FTE. During implementation, we ballooned up to 110 if we include the augmentation by the vendor. We had planned for, migration and additional to leverage the Gentax solution a little bit more thoroughly. We had planned for 86 during a transition period of roughly 4 years, eventually tapering down to approximately 70, excuse me, through attrition. So as you can see denoted, this plan was based on the hopes that POP 102 would come to fruition and ultimately be approved. However, it wasn't supported in GRB, and so the timeline for transition to steady state will be significantly extended at this point. So the next project is our processing center modernization. Paper is still a very significant part of what we do at the Department of Revenue, even with modern offerings like e-file, and it's a very laborious process and quite frankly not very efficient at this point. Again, we're supporting some obsolete technologies here. We've been in a couple situations where we needed to actually source old legacy equipment from places like eBay, and they come from very interesting parts of the world. So the theme continues. We want something that's more sustainably supportable and more efficient. So this is what we're currently working for towards. We're hoping to have this project well underway in December of this year. So here are the steps we've taken thus far.
Yes.
Could we please back up one slide? Could we hear just a bit more about those three phases? Is there time for just a tad bit more detail?
Yes.
Co-Chair Nathanson, so more detail. So we have research with other Gentax states. There are roughly 26, 27 other states across this country that are Gentax states. We want to not, like I said, reinvent the wheel. We'd rather learn from them, so we have contacted them. We did execute an RFI recently. That was back in January, I believe. We have sought and received Stage Gate 1 approval. That was last month. And we are currently working on QA for this effort.
And that's on phase one?
It's Co-Chair Riley, yes. I'll clarify that and say that's part of the initiation phase versus the execution phase.
I see.
Thank you.
So our our last project here is our PVS or property valuation system. It's a what is referred to as a CAMA system or computer assisted mass appraisal. Had to look at that. And it's an industry standard that they have. We do a lot of valuations in our property tax division in support of counties. These folks have the closest connection relationship with the counties across the state and do a lot of work with them on a daily basis. Our current environment and Chair Nathanson, I really appreciated the comments about integration and smart government. While we're not necessarily talking about people specifically here, we are talking about doing things a little bit more efficiently and for the greater good. We do have some very disparate technologies here. And appreciating the staff have a hodgepodge of applications, that's a technical term, that they have available to them to create this solution called property valuation today. It's a lot of outdated technology. In many cases, they're having to enter the same information in multiple applications, which you can appreciate the risk associated with that. Again, we are a buy versus build, so we'd like to find a COT solution. We're hoping to get a single pane of glass out of this, and we want to make something that's efficient and sustainably supportable. So we are in round three of five right now, and we believe we're going to have all rounds completed by the end of April. We're hoping to go live in the fall, late fall, early winter of 2018, and we have gone through the stage gate, are going through the stage gate process. We've gotten stage gate 2 and 1 approval. And if anybody's got any additional questions, I see we're wrapping up right on schedule here.
Questions? Don't see any. Thank you very much.
Welcome. Thank you.
Well, Co-Chair Riley, members of the committee, that was that wraps up today's agenda, and certainly we'll have a full agenda for next week. We'll have a few additional agencies. We also anticipate having one or more bills ready for public hearings, so we'll have a full agenda again next week.
Okay, if there's nothing more for the good of the order, I'm going to close this session, and thank you all very much for being here.
Thank you.
And thank you all very much for being here. Session.